Hi, thank you all very much for attending. I wasn't expecting two screens, so I'll be using a mouse for a pointer. So I want to present some of the work that I think turned out to be really interesting. Not that I didn't think it was interesting when I started, but I conducted this work with Stuart Wiest at the USDA Ag Research Service Center. And this is located in Pendleton, Oregon, in the northeastern portion of the state. We're pretty close to Washington, and we're in a 16-inch rainfall zone and have a Mediterranean climate, and we receive most of our precipitation during the winter. The predominant crop in our region is a dryland winter wheat, often in rotation with fallow. So this study was actually conducted as a follow-up to an initial study by Stuart Wiest and Harold Galani that was published in 2013. Titled Soil Organic Carbon and Nitrogen After Application of 9 Organic Amendments. And over here you can see some of the pictures from this study. We have the wood sawdust, sugar, and wheat residue, and these were added as a surface application. So the initial reason why they ran this experiment was to look at whether the type of carbon source amendment or composition would influence the soil organic carbon and then the organic carbon to nitrogen ratio. And they wanted to look at this instead of looking at the amendment dose or how many times it was applied. These were kept constant and they used 9 different amendments. The amendments were applied for 5 years under annual wheat or continuous fallow, and it was in a replicated split block design. You can see here the wheat, one of the wheat replicates, and here's one of the fallow. These amendments were added to the surface under either the continuous wheat or the continuous fallow, and this was done for 5 consecutive years. After the 5th year and the 5th wheat crop is when all of the rotations and all of the treatments were held constant and treated exactly the same. But the amendments were wheat residue, brassica residue, wood sawdust, alfalfa feed pellets, cotton linters, composted wheat residue, sugar in the form of sucrose, cattle manure, dry biosolid, and then there were also 2 crops, a brassica crop and a grass crop. And these were intended to be an intercrop when it was in the wheat replicate. However, it failed as an intercrop, so you're only going to see this data when it's in the fallow. And in the fallow, it's virtually just a monocrop. And we also have a check control where there weren't any amendments added. So in the wheat replicates, it's a monocrop of wheat, and in the fallow, it's just a fallow field. And all of these were applied at a rate of 250 grams of carbon per meter squared. So this is where I think it gets just a little bit confusing, is that these service amendments were added for 5 years, and after the final wheat crop, all of the plots remained fallow, and this was for about 3.5 years. After this fallow period is when they sampled for the Wiest and Galani paper. And then we tried to put the plots back into rotation, and all of them went to 2 different croppings of wheat, and then we were able to sample after that. We collected 5 cores at the 10 centimeter depth and homogenize them. And here in this picture, you can see one of the wheat blocks and also 2 fallow blocks side by side with the brassica crop, and here we have the grass crop. So when I talk about the data, I'll tell you, well, it was applied under wheat or applied under fallow. But between the 7 years from the last amendment and the time we sampled, there were 7 years in which everything was treated the same. And even on soil disturbance, this is under no-till, so after they added the amendment and then they seeded, they pulled the chisel drill through the fallow crops, so I guess it's not even a crop, through the fallow plots, just so they got similar disturbance. So we quantified everything using soil DNA and qPCR. When we looked at the bacterial abundance, when applied under wheat, there were no significant difference at a p-value of 0.05. And along the bottom, you can see we have check, the wheat residue, brassica residue, wood, cotton, alfalfa, compost, sugar, manure, biosolid, and the two crops that didn't establish. Under fallow again, there were no significant differences at the p-value of 0.05. However, if we fudged that to a p-value of 0.06, we saw that the grass crop was significantly different than the check. But if we looked at the amount of the fungi that we could recover based on the DNA in the soil, we saw a different story. For the fungal abundance, the wood treatment still had significantly more fungi in the top 10 centimeters. And this might not be too surprising since fungi are some of the primary decomposers of wood. When we looked under fallow, it was a bit of a different story too. Here's the check, and the letters above the bar indicate if they're the same, it means that they were not significantly different. When we looked at wood, the values were greater, but not significantly different. However, when we looked at sugar, it was almost twofold greater than the check control, and this was significant, and also the grass crop was significantly greater than the check also. And these results indicate that the enhancement of these fungal numbers were detectable 7 years after the final amendment. But we wanted to look at the community structure as well, and we used terminal restriction fragment length polymorphism analysis. And we plotted this using the nonmetric multidimensional scaling of the Bray-Curtis indice. When the amendments were applied under wheat, I've indicated these as the blue squares, and when applied under fallow, these are indicated as the red circles. You can see that a biosolid applied under wheat didn't cluster with the other samples, as well as the brassica crop. It was a little bit more distinct than any of the other treatments. But when I used Anisim analysis to present our statistic, the R statistic can help us determine whether these communities are separable or whether they're non-separable. And non-separable means that the treatment replicates are just as similar to other treatment replicates as to the same treatment replicate. When we looked at the R statistic, the different treatments in wheat and in fallow were not separable from one another. So we really didn't see detectable differences. And even with the non-clustering of the biosolid and the brassica crop, neither of these were separable from the check control of each under wheat or under fallow. And over to the right, I also have a little cheat sheet for the abbreviations for each treatment. But when we looked at the fungal communities, this is where it got really interesting. And all of the treatments group pretty close together, except you'll see that wood is very well separated when it was applied under wheat. And if you remember back to our qPCR data, it was almost three times greater than the check control when we looked at the fungal abundance. But what surprised me was how much of an outlier sugar was when it was applied under wheat or under fallow. And when I look at my data initially, I had 96 different plots with all of the plot replicates in. And I like to put it in a really huge cluster diagram and have it span two different screens. Everything was kind of intermixed and wasn't too exciting, and I wasn't sure how well I was able to separate the communities even using my methods. And then as I scrolled to the right of my screen, there were all of the sugar replicates. Even when I had the technical replicates in, they were completely unique. And the R statistic for sugar compared to any of the other treatments indicated that it was separable from almost all other treatments with an R statistic of 1. So this really suggested that something very interesting had happened to these sugar plots, and that we had not only stimulated the fungal abundance under fallow, but we were seeing very different communities. So some of the findings, especially that I thought was really interesting, were that there were these detectable differences 7 years after the final amendment. And this was only in the fungal communities. In the bacterial communities, They were non-distinguishable based on abundance and on structure. And also that the wood, sugar, and the grass cropping resulted in these longer-term changes. So in the title I say persistent, and that's persistent on a scale of 7 years. I don't know if we're seeing a snapshot where maybe the communities have diverged and now we're seeing the reconvergence, where initially if we would have sampled close to the final amendment, maybe all of the communities would have been distinct from the check control. And now we're just seeing the ones that are taking a longer time to kind of reconverge. But having the sugar, the wood, and the grass was nice because it kept me from targeting the journal of negative results, since everything was the same. However, looking back at the data, I'm starting to wonder if more of the interesting part of the study is not what the different communities are, because I'm not really sure where you would want to add sugar or add wood to your soil, unless maybe you were trying to change your fungal communities, as we can see here. But maybe the interesting part is going to be more of the communities that aren't different. That as we added these, it's most likely that under with biosolid and with manure that these have changed, and maybe they changed quite a bit. But when we left the land fallow and then we brought it back into crop rotation, we're not detecting these differences anymore. And so maybe it's with these amendments that one of the big parts of this study is that sometimes what you do does matter and sometimes what you do doesn't, because these are kind of coming back together and reconverging. So another question with that is, are these communities going to be resilient, meaning that they have changed and they've come back together, or were they just not sensitive and they never changed at all? So with this 7-point sampling, we're unable to really kind of differentiate what's happened in the middle. But it's pretty clear that with the wood and with the sugar, we're still seeing these detectable differences even 7 years out. And what's going to be even more exciting is when we look at these crops, which now we have kind of a new experiment and a new rotation, and we're going to have to GPS block them out because we know that what we started with is different. So with that, I tried to make sure I didn't go over time. I want to acknowledge the help of Stuart Weiss, who's been very influential, and this is his initial design, Harold Galani, and also excellent technical support from Elizabeth Torres, Alex Lasher, Mandy Weist, and Joe St. Clair. And just to add my little PR plug, we do have a postdoc position available in my laboratory. So with that, I'd like to open the floor for any questions, suggestions, thoughtful insights. Yeah, I was very surprised. It was not what I expected. And so going into several literature searches on, you know, what may have happened, because I would have expected it would be like a bacterial bloom that they would have just taken up the sugar immediately. Some of the papers I came across, when they heated the soil to remove the organic matter, they added in some microbial communities. And they found that when they added sucrose, it actually increased the fungal to bacterial abundance. But I also found a second paper with sucrose when they looked at the PLFAs for fungal communities and bacterial, that when they added sucrose, they saw a preference for sucrose-derived carbon rather than soil-derived carbon. So what communities are being stimulated and how that's changing, I'm not sure, but there is a precedent for this in the literature. Am I over?
No, you're not over.
You're fine.
Okay. Along the same line as that, did you remove the residues from each one of these plots?
Yes. They were removed and they were put back on for the wheat plots. So there are actually quite a few different factors between wheat and between fallow. So that's why I've kept my analyses separate. In the wheat, there was a starter fertilizer added that was a very low level of fertilizer just to help with the crop establishment. But the wheat was harvested, the grain removed, and the residue put back on. So you do have a residue and a treatment effect.
And the second part of that is your question. Do you think that there's a difference in the R and K strategies going on here? And you're selecting with the sugar those organisms that are
Definitely.
Compared to that,
Definitely. So that's what I expect, you know, because like with the wood, you're going to have the much slower decomposition. And I wasn't at the station when this experiment was ongoing. I got the end part, but I'm told that the sugar was just gone, which of course, you know, it's going to solubilize very fast. So that's what I expected. What I was expecting to see the community ship where you'd have the organisms able to utilize that very quickly. Versus some of the sources that are going to be more recalcitrant.
Was air tillage involved in any of this?
No, this was no-till.
All no-till.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then for each of, for when you went in to do your 0 to 10 centimeter sampling, you're removing surface residue, right?
It was pulled to the side and then we went right in, and there really wasn't a lot since it had been, we did have a fallow period before we went in. But the residue was removed, and even in the soil bags after, because we homogenized the soils in the field and then removed the soil for DNA analysis. And there wasn't a lot of residue in the bags.
How do you control weeds with so many different environments so close together?
Oh, for weeds between the plots? Or
weeds, period.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They would have been sprayed out, and I can give you more information on what was used.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Al?
Yeah, I have one question.
Yes.
Related to the no-till.
Uh-huh.
You sample bulk soil then between 0 and 10 centimeters.
Mm-hmm.
You know that in the stratification of no-till, would you expect to see the same if you went 0 to 5 versus 0 to 10?
So that's a good question. So that was one of our first papers that we did, and we looked at the bacterial abundance at 0 to 5, 5 to 10, and then I think it was 10 to 20. And so you do see that stratification, and I believe in that paper we looked at the diazotrophs, so the nitrogen fixers, and it really depended on nitrogen application in that paper on the distribution. But yeah, if we would have done the top 5 and then also the 5 to 10, and one reason I went with the 0 to 10 centimeters was we were already at 96 plots, and so to do all of the analyses with 96 plots and then times that by 2 depths.
Because
mm-hmm.
of the solubility of sugar, mm-hmm. you know, that's
going to be damaging. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we grouped the top 10. Mm-hmm. Yes. There are, and I see, and I find I'm kind of challenged with that. So there is a collaborator, Ann Kennedy, that has some PLFA data from, I think it's right after the amendments. So we had that available. And I didn't present any, I don't have the PLFA data, but I've been talking to Ann about doing PLFAs at the end so we can have kind of a series to see if they change, how much they change, and whether they're reconverging. But I wanted to use the DNA techniques and be able to have a little bit more resolution, and to be able to use the PLFAs, I'd have to do that again, and that's something that that I'm thinking of. But I wasn't comfortable going back to the soils that have been stored for other purposes to use them for DNA.
Okay. Thanks, Katie.
Okay, thank you.